the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pearl White system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 11th of September 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, it's that famous date once again, the 9/11 anniversary. I'm not really going to get into that, that's been covered in so many different places. Suffice to say that there are a lot of holes in the official story. And there are a lot of Jewish connections to it. And I still think that the best documentary that was ever done on that was 911 Missing Links by Mike Delaney, someone who was a big influence on myself when I first started internet activism. It's a great shame he's not really active, but I guess he's got a young family that he's bringing up. But what I would like to get into today, just to start off with, is what's going on with Brexit. As I said the other week, it keeps changing from day to day, what's happening there. I did think that we were definitely going to be leaving on October the 31st with Boris Johnson proroguing the Parliament, suspending the Parliament, which is a completely procedural thing that happens every time a new Prime Minister announces their new policies, they prorogue the Parliament for a few days, which is what Boris Johnson has done. And of course, the Ramoners have tried to sabotage this. They've tried to take him to court in England and lost. And now they've taken him to court in Scotland, and the Scottish judges, bizarrely enough, have said that it's unlawful for him to do this normal procedural thing where Parliament is prorogued. And they're not saying that it's unlawful for him to do this because he's broken the law or he's done anything out of the ordinary. They're guessing at his mindset. They're guessing that his reason for doing this may have been because he did not want the Ramoners to sabotage Brexit. I mean, what is wrong with Boris Johnson trying to kill two birds with one stone? He needs to get his new policy out. The parliamentary session needed to finish. It was the longest one in history. And also he wanted to honour the referendum result to leave the European Union. And yet these Scottish judges have somehow said that what he's done is unlawful because he did it with the wrong motivation. I mean, it's just unbelievable. These judges are so partisan. And we've now got the Scottish National Party, the leader of the Scottish National Party, the dwarf from the north, demanding that Parliament be reopened. And the Scottish National Party, the whole of Scotland is probably not even as large as London. And yet she's got the cheek to demand that because these Scottish judges have said that what Boris Johnson has done is illegal, that Parliament has to open up again. It's an absolute joke. Of course, the British Parliament have said that they will appeal this judgment and they'll take it to the Supreme Court, where hopefully it will be upheld. And also, whilst this is going on, we've got John Bercow, who has now finally resigned. Bercow, the turncoat traitor, who is supposed to be impartial and is supposed to be a Conservative MP. I mean, the guy is supposed to be a Conservative MP, and yet just the other week he was at the Communist Edinburgh Fringe Festival talking about how he would be doing all he could to prevent Brexit. He's supposed to be completely impartial, yet when he resigned, he got all these cheers and platitudes from Labour, And the Tories were just saying, shame on you, shame on you. He's timed his resignation so that when the new speaker is chosen, Parliament is in a state of disarray with the Conservative Party unable to rule. I mean, this is just unbelievable. The Conservative Party do not have a majority because of all the traitors that were in there that were voting with Labour. So Boris Johnson has withdrawn the whip from them, so they can't actually stand as Conservative MPs. So he doesn't have a majority. So he can't get anything through in government. But the rest of the people in government, Labour and SNP and the Greens, are refusing to allow a general election to be called so that one party can have a majority and can rule. I mean, how can that be lawful? That's hardly procedural, is it? To refuse to allow there to be a general election when the party that's in power doesn't have a majority to rule. And then on top of that, they're then talking about making a law to prevent Boris Johnson from leaving with no deal, as if that's just some idea that he's got into his head that he would like to leave Brexit with no deal on October the 31st. And it's actually already a part of a law. It's already a part of Article 50, that if a deal has not been reached after 2 years, which was back in April, then you have to leave without a deal. Back in April, it was extended. I believe it was extended a couple of times, taking us to October the 31st. But we already have a law that says that we have to leave without a deal on October the 31st if a withdrawal agreement has not been reached. And all the parties voted for that. They all voted for that law. And now what they're trying to do is create another law to undo the law that they have already voted on. And if it's possible for them to do that, what is to stop Boris Johnson from winning a general election and then just undoing this law that they have made and then leaving anyway? It's ridiculous. If they can just go in there and undo laws or make other laws to change what has already gone before, then there's nothing to stop Boris Johnson doing the same if he gets elected again. And this is what this poisonous dwarf, John Bercow, has allowed to happen. The whole reason why we are going through all of this is because he broke with procedure and allowed the opposition to start tabling motions in Parliament, and he allowed them to have these things called meaningful votes on the deal and what was happening with Brexit. And he overrode procedure and allowed them to outvote the government, basically. And now we're in a situation where they can apparently vote to have a law undone or vote another law in to contradict the law that went before. I mean, what an absolute mess. And Britain is supposed to be the mother of all democracies. We're supposed to be a shining example to the rest of the world. It's absolutely laughable. And last night, the most progressives of the left, the Negroes in the Labour Party and the head of the Green Party, they were acting like a load of students. So they were trying to hold the speaker in his chair so that he couldn't actually leave the House of Commons to walk to the House of Lords so that Parliament could be suspended. Absolutely pathetic. I think the British public are absolutely sick of this. If there was a general election, Boris Johnson would win, probably with a landslide if he has some kind of pact with the Brexit Party. I believe 55% of the country now just want to leave. Only 25% of the country say that they would like to remain. And a third of the people that actually voted to remain now want to leave the EU. The government is so far out of touch with public feeling that they're going to get a savage wake-up call when it comes to the general election. I mean, Boris's purging of the Conservative Party, of all these progressives, is absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's wonderful to see 20 or 30 of the most progressive, wet leftists claiming to be conservatives have all been kicked out, and they won't be able to stand in their constituencies. And then you've got Jeremy Corbyn, who's been calling all this time for a general election, and is refusing to allow there to be a general election when the government has no majority. Absolutely laughable. Anyway, I've got another laughable news story here to get into. And this is something that happened on Monday night. And it really, it's an example of how it doesn't matter what you do with Negroes. They will always be Negroes. It doesn't matter how much money they have. It doesn't matter how educated they have. They will always revert to type. I mean, we have studies that show this, where they've had Negro adoptees that have been adopted by white middle-class folks, and they've been alongside white children that have also been adopted by them, and their IQ remains the same, and they remain predisposed to criminal behavior exactly the same. We have rich, wealthy celebrity blacks that are very often getting caught out raping, particularly in the American football sports arena. Also, black actors, black comedians, I can think of, that have been accused of this. And what we had on Monday night, we had the TV Choice Awards. Monday night's TV Choice Awards descended into chaos as Emmerdale star Ahsan Najji threatened to kill Hollyoaks actor Jamie Lomas during a vicious brawl. Now, this isn't just some kind of party on a housing estate. This is the TV Choice Awards, where you've got a Negro threatening to kill a white actor. In a video obtained by The Mirror, Ahsan can be seen throwing a punch at Jamie during an explosive fight in front of shocked onlookers, including fellow celebrities who were forced to dodge out of the way of the expletive-filled exchange. Ahsan, who had been involved in a knife attack storyline in ITV's Emmerdale, could be heard shouting, "Do you think you are an effing big man? I'm going to effing kill you. I'm going to effing knife you," before attempting to take a physical swipe at Jamie. Bear in mind, these are people that the public are supposed to look up to. These are the people in soap operas. And here he is threatening to knife one of his fellow actors in front of all the TV cameras. After the Emmerdale actor threw the punch, IMA celebrities Malik Thompson Dwyer ran into the room to intervene and bundle Jamie out. According to reports, the pair had to be pulled apart by security twice at the Hilton Park Lane Hotel in Mayfair, London, with Ahsan eventually being escorted off the premises by security staff at around 11 p.m. Ahsan left with co-star Jay Consul and another woman while Jamie stayed at the hotel until 2 a.m. drinking with Love Island star Amber Gill and Malik. Ahsan, who plays Ellis Grant in Emmerdale, is now being investigated by ITV bosses after appearing to spark the fracas with goading remarks. One onlooker told The Sun, "Jamie was enraged by the sarcastic dig, which seemed to come out of nowhere and was completely unprovoked." So this was a fight that was started by the Negro. For some reason, he decided to have a dig at this white fellow. The white fellow obviously didn't respond, so the Negro then started threatening to kill him. But it gets better, because the guy that was threatening to kill the white man with a knife has recently been in a storyline on the television where he was pretending to be somebody who had been stabbed in order to prevent youths, black youths, going out stabbing one another. So he was supposed to be some kind of figure that was to prevent people from doing this sort of thing. Getting back to the article, it was a real flashpoint which left fellow cast members shocked and one or two people remarking on how it was like a scene from a soap opera. The bus stop was only stopped from escalating as Malik quickly stepped in to defuse the situation and calm Jamie down. Malik told The Mirror of the incident, "I told him to relax. I told him this isn't that kind of party. It's the TV Choice Awards." What kind of party did he think it was? Did he think it was some kind of urban squat party, some kind of drug party, some kind of crack party, where Negroes stab one another and stab other partygoers. That's the sort of thing that happens in London. That's apparently the sort of thing that he was chosen to prevent. According to The Sun, the event's host, Catherine Ryan, was reportedly one of those who moved out of the way to avoid being caught up in the ruckus. And really, they should expect this. If they're going to mix these young Negroes in there with alcohol at events like this, you're going to get fights. You're going to get trouble. That's what multiculturalism brings. It brings trouble. There's no way that you can avoid it. And if you're going to put these blacks, elevate them into these positions in society that they haven't actually got to through merit, then that encourages this all the more. It's like in the police. They want to get more Negroes in the police, so they say, right, we'll have to accept Negroes with criminal records then, because so many of them have got criminal records. We need to get more Negroes involved in ethnic minorities at universities. So what they do is they say, well, we will lower the requirements for Negroes to get into universities. And what they're saying now is we need to have 20% Negroes on every television program. So how are they going to do that? How are they going to get 20% Negroes on television programs? Well, they're just going to employ people simply because they're black, aren't they? I mean, Negroes are not very good actors. You really can't see the expression changing on their faces at all. You know, I watch them on the television occasionally, on the soap operas. They're absolutely dreadful actors. So what they've probably got here is they've got some young black guy who probably comes from a wealthy family that have paid for him to go to drama school, and they've just given him the role as this person that got stabbed on Emmerdale. And sure enough, he's reverted to type, and he started threatening to stab his fellow actors. Ajahn Najee, who had been nominated for Best Newcomer at the TV Choice Awards, joined Emmerdale in August 2018 as Sandra Marvin's on-screen son. Now, why was he nominated as Best Newcomer? I would suggest simply for a diversity quota, simply so they could say, look, it wasn't all white people. We did have this black guy there. A recent storyline on the soap saw Asan's character, Ellis Chapman, stabbed. Speaking to Digital Spy about the plotline in May, Asan admitted he was extremely grateful to the writers and the producers for trusting me with this. I wonder if those writers and producers are so happy that they trusted him with it now. He added, I'm glad we are exploring it, especially in London. The knife crime rate is through the roof at the minute, so to explore a sensitive issue like this one can only be a positive thing. If we put a light onto these issues, hopefully, the quicker it will stop. Well, there's a big spotlight on it now, isn't there, Asan? The spotlight is all on you for threatening to knife one of the other actors at the Celebrity TV Awards. Final story that I've got for us today. I may have talked about this a little bit before with Max Musson on Aryan Britannia. It's about the Amritsar massacre in India. And the reason why this has come up is because the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has been prostrating himself on the floor before the Indians over in Amritsar, ostensibly to apologise for the so-called terrible atrocity of the 1919 massacre of hundreds of people killed by troops under British command 100 years ago. As if this was completely unprovoked, completely unjustified. This was just a white guy that suddenly decided he wanted to massacre hundreds of people. So Justin Welby, 100 years later, decides that he's going to take it on himself to apologise for it. The Most Reverend Justin Welby visited the city of Amritsar in northwest India today, where the massacre happened in the Jallianwala Bagh walled enclosure near the city's Golden Temple, sacred to Sikhs. More than 300 people were killed, and 1,200 were injured when troops under British command fired into a crowd of protesters in April 1919. After returning from the visit, Mr. Welby took to social media to apologise on behalf of the UK. In a Facebook post, he said, "I feel a deep sense of grief having visited the site of the horrific Jallianwala Bagh massacre today in Amritsar, where a great number of Sikhs, as well as Hindus, Muslims and Christians were shot dead by British troops in 1919. I have no status to apologise on behalf of the UK, its government or its history, but I am personally very sorry for this terrible atrocity. It is one of a number of deep stains on British history. The pain and the grief that has transcended the generations since must never be dismissed or denied." Now, why isn't he going there and saying, well, look, this was something that had to be done? This was done to avoid there being a riot, to avoid there being lots of Europeans murdered, and it's not like that was something that hadn't already happened. I mean, this is exactly what had happened, and this is why this massacre actually took place. Let's have a look at what the details of it are. After the First World War, pressure mounted for India to become independent of Britain. At the start of April 1919, Indian nationalists sparked riots, which ended in a mob killing several Europeans, and it also left a female missionary for dead. So that is the situation that we are in. We have a tiny minority of Europeans over there in the Raj that are trying to keep order, they're trying to keep peace, and you've got an enraged mob of Indians that is going out there killing Europeans. Now, you have to take charge there because you're a minority. It's the same situation where we had the white slave owners out there in America, and they'd be out there isolated from anywhere else on a farm, and you'd have a family of whites running a farm, and you'd have hundreds of Negro slaves there that they were responsible for, and they would look after them, as I've gone into so many times before. You're not likely to damage your own property. You're not likely to pay a lot of money for a car and then hit it with a hammer. These slaves were well looked after. But sometimes they would get riled up. They would get encouraged to do silly things by the people that wanted to see all the slaves freed. Often it would happen, or sometimes it would happen, that these slaves would go wild and they would rape and kill white women and white children and do unspeakable things. And in order to prevent that, you had to make an example of any slave that did that to prevent the others getting that idea into their heads. You had to do this. You had to set an extreme example to prevent the same thing from happening again. This is also why we had lynching, because justice had to be seen to be done and it had to be swift, and they couldn't get to courthouses where they could have trials. They had to have makeshift trials of anyone that had committed a capital crime. And that was the same for whites as well. They also lynched whites over there in America. So this is the situation that we had here in India. We had violent riots. We had a mob that was killing Europeans. And they also left a female missionary for dead. In retaliation, British and Indian troops under the command of Brigadier General Reginald Dyer banned public meetings. And there were signs that were put up that were saying there is a curfew. Anybody that is caught out is going to be shot. He wanted to put the place under martial law, but it was all written up there. The Indians were all notified that they were not to congregate anywhere, because if they were to congregate, the likelihood was that another one of these riots would happen. Despite the order, protesters filled a walled enclosure called the Jallianwala Bagh. So they've openly defied the orders from the authority that brought civilization to India, the authority that got rid of the thuggy cult, which was a gang of murderers who just used to rob and kill people that travelled along the roads, the same people that brought communications infrastructure, libraries, hospitals, sanitation, all these wonderful things that white people have created. We brought those over to India. we were well liked by the Indians for doing this. The Indians' way of life was improved by us. And part of that was keeping law and order and ensuring that justice was done. And you had to keep law and order. In order to keep law and order, it has to be seen to be done. So these Indians directly disobeyed an order, which was publicized, which also said that shots would be fired if they broke this order, because if that hadn't happened, we could have seen more Europeans dead, we could have seen more women dead, we could have seen women raped. Despite the order, the protesters filled a walled enclosure called the Jallianwala Bagh. On learning of this, Dyer marched a force of 90 Gurkha and Indian soldiers into the enclosure and opened fire on the crowd for around 15 minutes. So it was Indians that fired upon the Indians. They obviously agreed that that was what needed to happen. He was fearful that this was a mob of rebels, and if it wasn't a mob of rebels, then the Gurkhas and the Indians would have told him that. I'm sure he would have been relying on their information. They were the people that knew the other Indians and what type of Indians they were there. So he thought, I'm going to have to make a show of force here. I'm going to have to restore order because we're at the stage here where there's an insurrection against the general order. So he got his Indians together and they fired into the crowd. More than 300 people were killed and 1,200 were injured. After this, he withdrew his men and ordered that all Indians traversing the street where the woman missionary had been attacked were to crawl along on their hands and knees. And surely that is better than just attacking innocent people. And it's not that bad having to crawl along on your hands and knees. And that is teaching them that they need to have respect for authority. News of the massacre soon reached Westminster. And Sir Winston Churchill was said to have condemned an extraordinary event, a monstrous event, an event which stands in singular and sinister isolation. Scottish judge Lord Hunter then ordered a committee into the massacre, and Dyer was soon forced to resign from the Indian Army. But he explained his actions. They had an inquiry into this, and he explained his actions that this was a necessary thing that he felt he had to do in order to restore order, in order to prevent riots, and in order to prevent more Europeans being killed. And you would think that Archbishop Welby would have some sympathy for the female missionary that was left for dead, not be prostrating himself before the Indians. As we know, the modern church is completely cucked, but Archbishop Welby is a prime example of that. The British Empire, it wasn't all good, but you do have to actually look into these accusations of bad behaviour on the part of the Brits to find out what the truth is, because we're not bad people. We're not the sort of people that would just shoot 300 Indians for no reason. And there was good reason for this, in order to keep order, in order to prevent a riot breaking out, and in order to save Europeans from being hung from trees, raped and massacred, like had already happened in various parts of India. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan.